Welcome to the Not Just a Game podcast, where we look at ethical and social issues to do with video games. I'm Dr. Catherine Flick from the Center for Computing and Social Responsibility at De Montfort University. Today I'm going to talk about a game that I've played recently called Life is Strange. And this is a game that came out last year and it was very well received by pretty much everybody. It's an episodic narrative-based game, and it has time travel so that you can undo decisions that you make. It's set around a girl who goes to an art school in a town in America. And this girl, who's a teenage girl, she's named Max. She has a lot of difficult decisions to make. I mean, she's your average sort of teenage girl. She has trouble fitting in at school, she's got friends, they've got troubles of their own, and she suddenly discovers that she has these superpowers of being able to rewind time. These are presented to you, these decisions that you make throughout this game, which is one of the key aspects of the game, really, because it's a narrative type game rather than an action. Or, I mean, there are lots of puzzles and things that you need to do, a bit like an action adventure-y type game where you go and find X of Y and things like that. But a lot of the decisions that you make are mostly narrative decisions. So these are often based on things like where you explore and what you decide to interact with and who you decide to talk to and the decisions that you make throughout the conversations that you have with various characters as you're wandering around as Max. And these decisions are presented to you at the end of each chapter of the game with an idea of how much your actions were in line with other people that also have played the game. So they distinguish between everybody in the world that's ever played the game and also your friends, which I assume are taken from your Steam friends list, or I guess, yeah, something like that. So today I want to talk a little bit about Life is Strange, because it was a game that I found very difficult to get into at first, and I'd like to explain a little bit about why that was. In fact, I put it down after half an hour and didn't come back to it for another couple of months. But then when I picked it up the second time, I really enjoyed it and really got into what was happening with it. So I want to talk a little bit about why that was. And the main reason was because of the expectations of the behaviour within the game. So you're expected to behave in a certain way inside this game. So for me, this is an interesting topic because it brings up the idea of social norms in video games. So you're probably wondering what a social norm is. Well, a social norm is kind of a philosophical, sociological, techie, buzzwordy word to use for essentially a socially expected behaviour. So it's a behaviour that would be expected of you by society. For example, if you're in America and you go to a restaurant, there is an unwritten rule there that you should tip. And how much you should tip is also kind of dictated by the level of service that you get, for example. Now, this isn't written down anywhere. And so if you're a foreigner and you've never ever used the internet before in your life, like I was when I was 17 and went to America, I didn't know that I had to tip. And when I was telling my more recent American friends this, they were absolutely horrified by the idea that I would not have tipped people at restaurants. But it was simply because I didn't know about this rule. And where I grew up, you don't tip people. So this was a long time ago before the internet. in the UK, for example, another social norm is that whenever anyone comes into your house, essentially, if they're a tradesperson or if they're guests, you ask them if they want a cup of tea. So this is yet another sort of unwritten social norm, and the British tend to kind of play this one up a little bit, and it's a bit of an in-joke. But it's certainly something that would be expected of you if you would expect to get a cup of tea or a cup of coffee or something offered to you if you went into somebody else's house. So some of these social norms are unwritten rules, but then some of them over time become so kind of part of the culture and part of the expectations of society that they get written into law. And so there are some sorts of social expectations that have been in law for a very long time. So, you know, not murdering somebody is probably a reasonable thing to expect of people. And that's been so reasonably expected of people that it's been written into law. I mean, there are, over time, these things tend to happen. So, what's this got to do with video games? Well, like I was saying, I mean, you have the social norms that are sort of in law, and you have the social norms that remain kind of unwritten rules, like the cup of tea or the tipping. And what in video games, there are really kind of two levels of social norms. So it's not so much about the unwritten and the written rules, although those come into play when you're actually playing the game. But you have, in video games, you have a social norm, set of social norms that are within the game, and what I would like to kind of call, I guess, meta social norms. So they're the social norms that have an impact upon the player, so the expectations that a player would have in real life. And those actually significantly affect the way that you might play a game. So, for example, in some games it's okay, and it's actually expected in many games to go into people's houses without them inviting you and to sift through all their stuff and find stuff that's helpful to you and take it away. If you were to do that in real life, it would be stealing, and that wouldn't be very socially accepted. But in some games, that's something that's expected, or at least not punished. In some games, however, like Skyrim and other games like that, there are very obvious times when you are, if you're doing that sort of thing, that you're kind of reprimanded, or at least you're not you can be arrested by people if they catch you stealing, etc. So there are games that don't have this particular norm. But that's part of the point of this whole discussion, is that there's games have got different expectations of the player, and some of those games are a little bit different from what we would socially expect in society, in real life. So on the second level, though, there are these meta-norms, and that might be something to do with how you are expected to play a game. So, for example, if you're playing a game like Diablo 3 or a cooperative game like an MMO, you might be expected by the society to play with a certain build in order to be most effective at the game, or to not hold your teammates back or something like that. So there's these sort of ideas that are constructed by like a community of game players about how you might go about playing that game. The other thing, and this comes back into Life is Strange, is that there are these ideas that that are socially accepted in terms of decision making as well. So game players within a community, so even this even is in single player games, could have expectations of how the narrative is supposed to go, or they might have expectations of the idea of having canon narratives, or even the developers will often have a canon narrative that they expect the majority of players to actually play through. And so if you deviate from those sort of social norms that are imposed upon you at a meta level, then that becomes kind of complicated, especially if you want to play follow-up games. So I'm thinking like things like Dragon Age games here. So in Life is Strange, this is an interesting thing, because also some of these meta level social norms are things that you might expect to have problems with if you were to do them in real life. So, for example, I mean, if we don't have a reference point for what our social norms are in a game, so if I don't know that it's okay to go and steal stuff, I might not go and try to steal stuff. I mean, by this stage in these sorts of games, you kind of expect to be able to go and do some of these things. But at the very beginning, before you ever picked up a game in your bright little life, you probably had a set of social norms about how society is supposed to go and how you're supposed to behave in these sorts of in certain sorts of situations. So you take your reference point from real life in terms of social norms. So the first time you ever went into an RPG and you went and looted something from someone's house, you might have felt a little bit bad about it, or you might not have even considered that it was possible at all. It might have felt a bit weird if you were playing Link in one of the in one of the Zelda games to go and smash people's pots. It might have felt weird to take their rupees. It might have felt a bit strange if you were in a Final Fantasy type game and you went around opening chests, random chests in people's houses and things like that as well. So it probably felt a little bit weird. Probably also in other sorts of games, it might have felt a bit weird if for the first Grand Theft Auto game you played, if when you hit somebody with your car and you just drove off and nobody seemed too bothered about it, that might have felt a bit strange. And the other thing, though, is that you might have actually heard about the fact that you could do this sort of stuff in these games before you played it, and you might actually deliberately go out to seek these sorts of risk, what we would consider in real life being kind of risk-taking behaviours, and perhaps, you know, illegal behaviours that you can't actually do in real life, but you can get away with in the game. And it's these violation of these sort of social norms that becomes a bit interesting. So here's why it took me a little bit to get into Life is Strange. Coming back to Life is Strange, and I've talked to you a little bit about social norms now, so hopefully you've got a bit of an idea of what I'm talking about when I talk about this stuff in Life is Strange. So in Life is Strange, one of the first kind of quests that you get outside of the, when you first leave the kind of tutorial area, I guess you could call it, is to meet your boyfriend. You get a text message that says, come and meet me, it's urgent, I'm in the car park with my car. But before you go and meet up with him, you have to go and get his USB stick that's got some videos or something on it from your room in your dormitory. So you go back to your dormitory, and there's a bunch of things that you have to do before you can get in, because the bitchy girls are being bitchy and blah, blah, blah. They're sitting outside and being horrible to you, and you've got to get rid of them. And there's a whole bunch of stuff. So you're already kind of late, like your boyfriend's sitting there waiting for you, and you're like, yeah, it's really urgent, and these stupid girls aren't moving, and all this crap's happening, right? So when you finally get into your dormitory, you run upstairs to your dormitory, and you go into your room, and you have to kind of rifle through all your own stuff to find the USB stick for a bit. You grab the USB stick, and then, you find a thing that says, oh no, so one of your friends has borrowed your USB stick, and you've got to go get it off her. Why she was in your room taking your USB stick. I mean, personally, I would find that very annoying. But anyway, we'll leave that as a narrative thing. Maybe a teenage girl thing, who knows. Anyway, so you go down the road, down the hallway to your friend's place, and your friend's room is being, like, she's not allowed out by some other friend because they're having a fight. And you've got to find out the reason for the fight. And all of this time, I'm basically sitting there thinking, oh my God, my poor boyfriend sitting here in the car park, and he's waiting for me, and I'm, like, stressing him out because I'm not coming, and it's just really, really frustrating for me as a player, because there's no way in hell that I would want to leave someone waiting there like that. I mean, it might be that I would just forget about the USB stick and give it to him another time and go off and go see him. Or I'd be like, okay, girls, just, like, seriously deal with your shit and give me the USB stick and I'll come back and sort it out later. But that's not an option in the game. You have to have the USB stick before you can go. So you've got to go through all this crap. And basically, what really frustrated about me is that when you're in the girl's room, finally, you have to go and sort out this drama by going and sifting through this girl's stuff in her room. You go into this girl's room and you're basically sifting through all her things, and that makes me feel really uncomfortable, because this particular game is quite an immersive game, and I was kind of playing it like I would play myself, which is often a point of reference that many game players go towards. So you go in there and into this girl's room, and you're rifling through all her stuff, and you find out the reasons that she's upset, and there's all this sort of, you have to sort the drama out. But the problem is that if you don't go and have a look at every single interactable item within the rooms, as your, like, your room, this your friend's room, and then this other girl's room that's stopping your friend giving you the USB stick, if you don't go and look at all of this stuff, you get penalized by the game later, because you can't help, you know, you can't solve other people's problems so easily, and you get kind of what would be considered bad results. So this really frustrated me, because I was responding to the social norm of not keeping somebody waiting for me. So I rushed through and I just did the bare minimum to get what I needed to get done. And I mean, yes, you could argue that, yes, that's a perfectly reasonable way to play the game, but it's obviously not the way that the developers intended you to play the game, because at the end they have this judgmental type thing where it shows you all of the decisions that you made and whether or not other people made them as well. And I have to admit that when I was looking at that and I saw that somebody had made a decision that went along a certain path, I thought, oh my gosh, those people are horrible. And some of the wording in the decisions is also quite problematic because it makes you feel awful if you didn't play it the way that was expected. And I don't want to spoil anything here, obviously, because it's quite a good game still, and I think you should all play it. But this being able to kind of compare what you did with your friends and judge them is a really interesting way of perpetuating some of these metasocial norms that I was explaining before. So these sorts of ideas that there are particular paths that are considered kind of good endings or canon endings, or you're some sort of deviant if you've gone off and let somebody do something that they otherwise could have avoided, or these sorts of things. So I found that very frustrating. So although I didn't like that, so I actually kind of rage quit after that because I was really mad, because I got to a point where I couldn't get, there wasn't much I could really do. I mean, I could certainly go through stuff, but it was all decisions that I didn't like. They didn't seem right for me. So I actually and then I realized, actually my husband told me that, oh, I should have, he said, you should have gone and looked through all this stuff. And I'm like, but why? Why should I have done that? Like, it's perfectly reasonable to expect people not to go and rifle through all your stuff when you go into their rooms. But anyway. So, although I didn't like that at the beginning, so the conflict with the social norms made me quite anxious, it made me quite annoyed that I had to keep my boyfriend waiting, although he didn't seem too bothered when I actually finally got there. I did actually go on to love it once I'd taken on the fact that it would be socially acceptable within the game context to actually take my time, particularly taking my time and also root through everybody's stuff. And so I went back and I replayed the game from the beginning, and I took my time and I looked at everything, and I stored away information for later, etc. But even then, as I was playing through the game, which I then ended up loving for various other reasons, but it was a great game and I do recommend it. It was interesting because even though I knew about this socially acceptable way of behaving within the game, I sometimes would miss places that I ought to have rummaged through because I felt they were still kind of off limits. So, for example, when you go to Chloe's house, you can go and look through the rooms in the house. But I felt it was kind of, I went to the bathroom because I thought that was kind of reasonable, but I didn't go into her parents' room because I thought that was kind of a bit creepy and a bit weird. So that's sort of, I guess, 35 something years of drilling in social expectations of where you should and shouldn't go in somebody else's house has really had an effect on me there. And I mean, this is often, I mean, it's unwritten rules. I mean, it wouldn't have been illegal for me to go in there in real life, but it didn't feel right, you know. Also, when one of your friends is having some troubles, you're invited to go into their room and you have to get some books or something like that. And she's having a really bad time. And it would have felt really quite rude of me to say, oh, well, I'm sorry you're having such a horrible time. Maybe I can help go through all that sort of conversation. And then she's obviously finished talking. And then I spend 20 minutes going through and rummaging through her stuff. Like, that would have just felt really rude. So I just left. And that then meant that I couldn't do something later on because I hadn't gotten enough information about my friend in order to do that. So it was quite complicated and a bit stressful, but I still feel like I did the right thing, if that makes sense, even though it led to potentially bad endings or whatever. So I guess really what I want to say in this podcast is that, yeah, look, I mean, there are lots and lots of games that have these sorts of social norms in them. Not just social norms in terms of within the game environment, but also this sort of meta level of people expecting you to play a game. So it might be the developers that expect you to play a game in a certain way, or it might be other players like your friends or other people who've played the game who can see kind of, at least in aggregate, what it is that you have done or you plural have done. And I think it's really interesting that some of these sort of expectations come from some of the limitations of games from a long time ago, in terms of how, and some of it comes through laziness of programming, in terms of things like just kind of sticking stuff and requiring people to actually go through everything. But also some of it comes in a narrative sort of sense, in that how else would you get some of this information unless you had sort of someone talking to you for however long you'd know them, and hanging out, and you'd know how they were from that, or reading long pieces of text about your background or something like that. So that's not very narratively exciting to do. Same thing with, a lot of knowledge that you might have from in certain sorts of game background knowledge you might have. I mean, they often have things like codexes and stuff like that, say, for example, in BioWare-style games. But a lot of it is narratively, that's not necessarily the most exciting or most captivating way to present that information. So having you do a puzzle or having you pilfer a bunch of things might be an easier way of doing that. So it's a little bit complicated to try to replicate some of these real-world social expectations into a game world. But I'm wondering maybe if in virtual reality and stuff like that, these might start to kind of cross over a little bit and become a bit more exciting. But anyway, I don't really have any huge conclusions here, other than it's an interesting sort of thing to do. And maybe if you're listening to this and you're interested, if you can think of any games that you've played that have had these sorts of expectations where they made you maybe feel a bit uncomfortable, or you've deliberately done something knowing it was bad but you didn't feel too bad about it, or you had that little slight little fear in the back of your head that you're like, maybe someone else is judging me for this. So maybe you've had something like that and you'd like to... send me a message about it. I'll have the comments open on my webpage for this entry, for this podcast, and feel free to leave a comment, or you can always talk to me on Twitter. I'm at Catherine Flick on Twitter. And that's basically it for today. So, other than that, the games that I've been playing, I've been playing recently a lot of Guild Wars 2, and I recently got to level 80, and I'm a ranger, Asura ranger, and I unlocked all my druid specifications, which basically took me forever. And I quite like 100%ing zones in that game, because it tells you when you've done it, and a lot of games don't do that. Are there any other completionists out there? Do you also like doing 100%ing things? I have to say, in some games I really don't like doing it, but in games like this where it's kind of got a long play time that I expect to be playing it, I don't mind doing 100%ing stuff, especially if it gets me benefits like EXP or gear or something like that. So otherwise I've not been playing a huge amount because I've got some Guild Wars and I've been knitting a jumper for my mom, so lots of television instead. But do keep in touch and let me know what you've been up to. And if you've got any questions about future podcast episodes, I'm always open to requests. I'm off to PAX East in a couple of weeks, so I probably won't be recording until after then, and it'll probably be a post-PAX East recording. I'm giving a talk, so if you're at PAX East on Sunday at midday, I think, unless the schedule's changed, I'll be giving a talk on my Ask an Ethicist booth that I've been running for 3 years, and talking a little bit about some of the findings that I've had and general ethical issues. Hope you enjoyed this. So long. You've been listening to the Not Just a Game podcast. The music in this podcast is Hot Machine Cold Surface by Ben Prunty on OC Remix. The graphics are from the Noun Project.